Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Hello.
How are you going?
Good. How are you?
Good.
So you know what song you're going to sing today, right, Mills? Because you have the voice for it.
I don't have the voice for it.
You do, totally.
This is the first time in 20 years you've ever told me I've got the voice for something because it's you, because you don't want to sing anything.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I really like the show, though.
Okay, well, start with me. Ready?
Okay,
be running up that road.
Keep running up that hill.
Be running up that building.
That's it, baby.
Good.
Do you know, I was just saying to the guys earlier, Kate Bush was in the 80s, like, was hands down one of the greatest female lyricists. Even today, Ange absolutely friggin' loves her. She's like, she just loved Kate Bush.
She's so clever.
I never really got her, but I tell you what, she's fucking cashing in today.
She's cashing in big time.
Holy.
Holy moly.
Mm.
That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love that. I love hearing stories like that. She wrote the song, produced the song. She owns all the royalties, you know, so everything
clever.
She makes now, it's hers fully.
Very clever, very clever. But definitely, I did, you know, the show.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
We're hanging out waiting for the end of it now.
Yeah. It's the last one. Is it the last one? Oh, no,
there's another. No, there's another season, but we've got to wait 2 years for it.
Yeah. It's funny how you watch people grow up. You know, those kids become adults in their shows, you know? It's freaking bonkers, excuse me.
It's insane. So what we're doing today is I think the popularity of the question one was good. So we're gonna ask some more Q&As.
Sure.
I have no idea. The girls have got this thing where they just don't want to show me. They want me to, you know, get off the cuff.
Just drop it.
We've got quite a few questions, so I'm just going to be taking them at random. And if I don't like them, I'm just going to put them back. Let's be honest.
Sure.
I actually don't know what they're about. I think they might be around money or something.
Okay.
But,
take your time.
Okay, question. You ready?
Yes.
How much debt is too much debt?
Well, it just look. It's an interesting question because there's good debt and there's bad debt, right?
Well, tell everyone the difference.
Debt that you are investing in that's an appreciating asset. It's money
like
that's
a house
yeah, it's like money a, that you like you're borrowing it at 6%. Well, fucking mate, you're going to be borrowing it more than that soon. You're borrowing it at 6%, but you're making 10% on it a year. So that's good debt, you know?
Yeah.
Because it covers itself and it gives you an income.
Yeah.
Bad debt is putting it into something that's a depreciating asset, you know, that you want to get rid of. Something that's stopping you from putting money aside into savings and being able to build your savings.
So bad debt is having like a credit card bill that's just sitting there. It's not
a car that you're paying off that you haven't got. You're not running through a company or you're not running through a business, and it's a depreciating asset. A boat that you're paying off that you're not using as a business. It's a depreciating asset.
Anything that's I think the best way to say it is that anything that's bad debt is something that is not appreciating in value. You've got debt on, but it's not appreciating in value, and you can't have any benefits from that debt. You know, like a credit card debt, it's just sitting there. It's money. It's not doing anything for you. You've got to pay it off. Whereas you've got a house debt and you're paying off a house. But that's an appreciating asset.
Mm-hmm. As long as it is an appreciating asset.
As long as it isn't.
You know? So you're going to have as much good debt as you want, you know, but bad debt, you got to be careful of because bad debt creates emotion, it creates instability inside of yourself, and bad debt attracts more bad debt. And generally, when people are getting into bad debt, it's because they're paying to not feel something. You know, they're buying for the purpose of trying to feel something and avoid the feeling of something else. You know, so they're buying cars because they want to feel the status of buying a car and they don't want to feel, you know, like whatever it is, poor or that they're poverty stricken or anything like that. So they're trying, and there's a lot of that goes on. They're buying for the short-term satisfaction stuff. So, you know, jet skis, like, all that sort of stuff. They haven't earned the right to have those things.
Well, I think that's the point, right? It's not about none of those things are bad in and of themselves or good or bad. It's just like how are you buying them? Are you buying them because you're trying to make yourself you know, feel better about yourself? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you're quenching this short-term satisfaction thing.
That's right.
Or are you buying them because it's a part of a strategy? It's part of what you're doing. You know exactly. Like I know with you, every time you you buy anything like that, you always sell it off. It's never really a depreciating asset. You always sell it for more than what you paid for it, you know.
Yeah.
But a lot of people aren't doing that. They're, they're like they've got extra money so they go and spend it over here, but actually it's not a part of a strategy. It's not a part of a system. And as a result of them, as a result of that, it can cause emotion down the track.
Yeah.
So the key with debt, in my opinion, is that you've got to handle it in such a way as it's not causing emotion. So generally speaking, bad debt will cause more emotion than a good debt. And obviously we're labelling it like very, you know,
broadly.
But bad debt will generally cause more emotion because you can see that it's not going towards something like it's not going to give you an advantage in the long term. It's money that you've spent in the past that you're just kind of trying to pay down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
generally causes more emotion.
Yeah. So you're better off buying someone else's loss. Do you know what I mean? So if someone else has gone and bought it, like who would have ever thought that we'd find a time in history where a person would buy a depreciating asset and it would become, through the acquisition, an appreciating asset, right? So years ago, the old fable was, hey, you go in and you buy this car and the minute you drive out of the driveway, you're going to lose 20%. Mm-hmm. And that was the situation up until now, where you drive out of the car, drive out of the car garage or the, you know, wave goodbye to the salesman and you've made, you know, 15, 20% on the vehicle you've bought. Because the used car market is just bonkers, absolutely friggin' bonkers at the moment. Mm-hmm. So I don't think anybody could have ever foreseen a time when that would happen. But generally, well, the reason I would, you know, I think that I remember the first time I bought a brand new car and I went through that experience of driving out of the driveway and losing that money. Mm-hmm. And I mean, some people may think, look, that's the wrong way to think. But for me, it's worked well and it's been an important way in which I've bought things. Is I've always looked for the bargain. You know, I've always looked and I've gone, okay, this is what I want and this is what I want to pay and that's what I'm going to pay.
So then going into that whole question of how much debt is too much debt, I think it's really dependent on your strategy because you're in debt. Like if you were to look at it, right, but you're using other people's money to make you more money,
right?
So you've got debts to be paying down, but you've actually there's a whole strategy towards it. So you understand how that's going to work, how that's going to get paid. Mm-hmm. So there's no emotion around that, right? Would you agree?
Yeah.
It becomes too much when it's more than in your perception you can handle. So you become emotional. You call it too much when you're emotional around it. So you've got to remove the emotion around it.
Yeah.
That's my first thing. You've got to remove your emotion around the debt. And I have a strategy that I teach, you know, when I'm doing my wealth principles, you know, Zoom calls and stuff every month. And, you know, I've got a strategy that follows the law of supply and demand where you focus on the debt, your service goes away. When you focus on your service, your debt goes away. But that only happens when you're not emotional about it. You can actually look and figure out what's going on, where's the emotion here, figure out the emotion and then deal with it. We just had someone on the last call who was talking about her debt. She was really emotional about it. And pretty much 99% of the time that someone comes to me with a financial situation issue, it's not a financial issue, it's an emotional issue. There's an emotion attached to why she was in debt.
Right.
As soon as she sorts out the emotion that deals with the debt, she realizes that she's got over and above what she needs to clear that debt.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
But another big thing there is like that people don't get is perspective on things. You know, people don't have any perspective on things. When you've no perspective, and that includes me, when I'm emotional, I go, okay, let's get some fucking perspective on this. You know, okay, if I'm emotional about, okay, I'm going to spend X amount of dollars on a development site, I have to get a perspective on it. Okay, what's it going to sell at the end? How many lots am I going to produce? So you know then, the minute you buy the product, you've already made money.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? But if you haven't got that perspective on things, you're emotional, you know?
Well, I agree. But I think that, don't you think that the emotion in the first place creates a situation where you can't see the perspective? The emotion underpins that, right?
Yeah, yeah. For sure. But then that's
why perspective helps you to not be emotional.
Yeah, that's why you have to have emotional intelligence. So But what people think emotional intelligence is something you find in a book or it's a spray that you put on. But emotional intelligence
Who do you know that thinks emotional intelligence is a spray?
But they do. People don't think they have any, they don't realize that they don't listen to their emotional intelligence. Their emotions giving them intel, telling them something. Okay, you haven't got any perspective on this. You need to get perspective before you press the button on this and press go. You need to get some perspective. You know, if you can't run around saying I'm broke when in actual fact, if you sit down and calculate the net worth of all your, you know, the overall worth of all your belongings that if you were to go to sell them, now you got perspective on things. Yeah. It's, well, you're not actually broke. If anything went wrong, you'd be able to flog this and sell this and do this and do this. So you haven't, you're not actually broke at all. It's just that you're emotional. So perspective helps to override the emotion and helps the intellect to come in and do its job, you know, to get some intel on the environment and what it's telling you, you know. And that's all emotions are around money, is that you're not lacking money, you're lacking intelligence. You know, you're lacking your internal self telling you something. Mm-hmm. You're lacking emotional intelligence. Yeah, and when you stop and you sit down and you accumulate and gather yourself and stop being emotional, you'll see that you're not in debt. Mm-hmm. You're actually okay. So bad debt is only bad debt when it's haunting you and you haven't put any perspective on things. You haven't calculated correctly, you know, the ramifications of your actions and the buttons you're pressing around your developments or around your spending. And when you put perspective on things, it helps you to go, okay, fuck, okay, I can see where at least I'm getting it wrong. I know where to tidy it up and that I can tidy it up so I can actually get into that flow state of having money come into my life.
Mm.
Because there's loads of money. Like, there's fucking loads of money. Yeah. It's just when people make loads of money, it's just they don't organize it properly.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. I think that answers that question. Mm. If it doesn't, well, then we're moving on anyway. Okay. What is something I can do today to help with the fact that inflation, mortgages, cost of living and petrol are all going up? Everything's going up. Well, what's something you can do today?
Well, again,
I just chucked a Mitch then and I moved away from the microphone and moved back.
Right. So now I'm all paranoid. And so I think the common sense thing to do is get your wealth principles in place. Because what's happening is your money is managing you. You're not managing your money. Your emotions are managing you. You're not managing your emotions. So you've got to get a system in place that has stood the test of time and works.
So let me backtrack a minute. If you don't have a system in place, you have to put a system in place.
Yeah.
And if you've got a system in place, you need to refine that system. So anyone who's using the wealth principles already, you may have to refine that to, like, if you're noticing that, you need to refine it so you don't, because at the end of the day, that there's the emotion will come up with that, right?
Yeah.
In terms of you noticing it. So the system is key. It seems like, you know, what's the one thing I can do today, right? But the system is key because it's what you do every day and it's like you don't have to think about it. It's like there's an order to it. There's a reason why a system works and you've got to have the right system, obviously, which is why, you know, our wealth principles. But and the other thing I would suggest is from the mindset point of view is how do I explain it? You've got to get clear on what's happening around you. It's just part of the cycle. If you get emotional around it, go, oh my God, it's increasing over here, increasing over here, increasing over here. I'm not going to get ahead, da da da, whatever. And you're getting emotional around it for any reason, for even why it's become like this, then you have to sort out that emotion. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, yeah, 100%. And you know, we say this all the time, but money flows to where it's organized most. So where the governing body is most organized is where money comes to. So the key to being able to manage that is to get really organized, because it's supply and demand, and that's the first law of economics. If you increase the demand on yourself, how can I be more organized? How can I be more disciplined? How can I be more diligent? If you can increase the demand on yourself, then the supply has to follow. So the money will find you. But people think when the money finds me, then I'll get more organized. And it's like, no, you have to act now as you would in the future.
I think that's a very important point.
And behave, you know, treat your life like you're a corporation. Get your shit together. Get your money organized. Get your finances organized. Get them, become diligent, dynamic, you know, disciplined. Make sure that you're always working your money and it will find you. And I mean, we just see this over and over and over and over. And anybody that ever questions it has never got themselves organized. You know, they just live in the land of cause and effect. Hey, when the fucking money turns up, then I'm going to feel better. When inflation's always been there, it's always been there. It's never, ever going to go away.
It's part of a cycle, right?
So right now, inflation is up 8%, wages are up 5%, and that's what's causing this fluctuation, this emotion, because there's a 3% gap. But liquidity always finds its balance place. It always does. You know, and there's more fucking opportunities right now as this has happened than any other time in history. There's so many opportunities than any other time in history. There's more opportunities now.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. Okay. Okay, next question. Oh, I don't know what this means. Should money be a factor in relationships? What does that mean?
Well, if the question is really, well, money's causing a problem in the relationship, well,
is that what it's meant to mean?
Should money be a factor in relationships?
As in, does that mean like should I
factor it in?
Factor it in terms of the person I'm looking for or the person I don't know.
Shit, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 100%. Like my father said to me all the time, Mitch, marry someone who's super rich. Why wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know. You,
okay, I don't know.
I know, I get that. But, I mean, he's old school. He comes from an old
school. Oh, no, the old that was school. Fine for him.
It was fine for him. But, it doesn't mean that they have to be super rich in money. But, you know, marry someone
that's the key.
Yeah, marry someone who is, you know, who has switched a vision, who's switched on, who's inspiring to be around, you know, who's wealthy in intelligence, is willing to look at themselves, wants to grow.
Ange always says that when she tells the story of you guys. You know? She said, Mitch didn't have a lot of money back then because back at that time, she said, but I really saw in him that he had everything it took. He had so much potential, so much drive, so much inspiration that was pushing him in that way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, so is that what it means, do you think?
Yeah, should money be...
I'll tell you how I see that.
Well, money is just... Okay, then you can tell me. Money is just wealth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Money is just... It's just an exchange of wealth.
Exchange of value.
Like, yeah, but value comes from what somebody values inside of themselves. I was talking about this the other day. And I was talking about... Somebody had said to me, you know, somebody got the fucking... their knickers in a knot around... me talking about self-worth and net worth. And I explained it like this. I said, if you come along and I give you $10 million, are you going to have to summon more characteristics and traits in your life now to be able to manage that $10 million? Mm-hmm. And the answer to that is obviously yes, because you're going to have to become more organized. You're going to have to become more disciplined. You're going to have to meet... You know, you're going to have to put yourself out there. You're going to have to be protective. You're going to have to be emotionally intelligent if you want to be able to make money with the money.
And and manage that properly.
And manage that money properly. And you know.
Not just manage it, master it, help it to grow.
Yeah, because
like
if you don't, you know what will happen. Straight away. It'll be taken off you.
Yep.
So you'll attract that and you'll take it off you in forms of sharks, deals, business deals.
Yep.
People just find you and they come and they just take the money.
Yep.
So you have to summon certain qualities in order that are greater than the ones you have now to be able to manage going from a million to 10 million, right? Those qualities, you have value on them. The place in where you find that value is in yourself.
Yes.
So that's called self-worth.
Yes.
So if you want to have more net worth, you have to have more self-worth. And people with high net worth have high levels of self-worth in the areas that they value the most.
Mm-hmm.
And people with low net worth have low self-worth in the areas that they value the most. So if you don't have high self-worth, you will never have high net worth. So the key then is not to chase the net worth. The key is to build the self-worth. Don't chase the net worth because that's what all the others do. Build the self-worth. That's where you're going to find your stability around your money and your wealth. And I do it every day. I literally have habitually made it something I do every day. I go in and I build my self-worth around money every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
Read my mission statement every day. And in doing that now, especially now, because the temperature is starting to rise,
mm-hmm.
it's starting to turn up. I mean, we'd been talking about this since 2003.
Yeah, for a long time.
Long time, telling them that this was coming. So now is the time that people got to pull out everything they learned, get themselves organized. And I'm not doing it because I want to cope. I'm doing it because there's deals coming that I want to be able to execute on mm-hmm. and I want to be able to get involved in. And I think that that's just wise.
So what's that got to do with relationship then?
So your relationship, your wealth in terms of your relationship, it's never about your relationship with another person. It's about your relationship with the characteristics and traits that you bring to the table of a relationship and you having value on them and not giving up the value on them because you're with another person. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And seeing the value in the other person that you're going to marry, you're going to hang out, or going to spend time, and ask yourself, okay, is that something that I value? Mm-hmm. You know, because it... Relationships are not a penis and vagina thing. They're a fucking business deal. Mm-hmm. No matter what anybody says, what do you bring to the table? What do I bring to the table? And based on those two things, what are common amongst us? And how can we use those common characteristics and traits amongst us to be able to make a difference in our lives, our children's lives, and the world? Mm-hmm. That's really what relationships are about.
Relationship, one of the biggest breakups, reasons that people break up in terms of relationships is arguments over money, right?
So, well, that's what they would have you think, believe. Yeah,
but it's not really arguments over money, right? It's a self-worth thing, right?
It's miscommunication of value.
It's miscommunication of value. So it's not about... it's not about saying that if a person doesn't have money, they're not valuable in a relationship, right? What are we saying then? What are we actually saying?
We're saying that, first off, everybody, what's value in it? What's value in it?
Everyone brings value in different areas,
having money,
right?
And not having money, right? Because it's all relative.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You have somebody that you perceive has no money. You only perceive they have no money based on the position that you put yourself in,
yeah.
But you can put somebody below it and you look at them and you say they're poor. But somebody looks down on you and says, you're poor.
Yeah.
So that's all relative. But it's to do with, okay, what are the common things that we bring to the relationship that we can be of value to the world?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
And never negotiate or never abandoning them. We'll always negotiate on our values, but never abandoning those values, staying steadfast to those values and making sure that they're the things that are going to carry you through life.
Yeah.
And that you won't give them up for anybody.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So that, if you want to ask the question again.
No, the money was, should money be a factor in relationships? So the answer is...
Well, and the other thing is money is just an inanimate, money's just a fucking inanimate object. It's just like holding a fucking toothpick.
Yeah.
What is it? What do you mean by money? Yeah. What you really mean is you mean by wealth and value. That's what you mean. Mm-hmm. And should that be important in a relationship? Hands down.
Yeah.
Hands down. Yeah. Very important.
Yep. I'm good with that.
Know what you're getting into. Yeah.
Okay, I'm good with that. I think we'll take maybe one more question.
I don't mind.
Okay. I already save my money, but it's not enough. What can I do? I'm going to start to answer this question.
Go.
And then you can take over. But...
Might not want to.
Maybe not want to. I'm going to tell you what I notice. Mm-hmm. There's because we have certain rules in terms of savings, right? In terms of how you manage your savings and how you push and how you drive your savings. Yes, yes? Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of people out there that do that and do it successfully because they understand the law of supply and demand, mm-hmm. which is that when you put a demand on yourself, the supply will follow, mm-hmm. okay? There's a small number of people who I've noticed recently have been like, I've got my savings up here, but I don't seem to have any more money, or I don't seem to have my wealth isn't growing, right? And I think that they subconsciously think that just because they're doing the savings rule, which is putting that extra 10% aside every quarter, right, that naturally life is just going to throw things their way. Does that mm-hmm. make sense? What I've noticed is they've kind of just put their wealth principles, they've increased their wealth principles in terms of their savings. Mm-hmm. They've taken it from somewhere else and that's all they've done. And they haven't asked any further questions about themselves. What can I do? Where is money flowing from? Like, they haven't asked and stepped up the demand on themselves. They've stepped up the demand in one way by actually sitting down and doing the principle. But subconsciously, they're just sitting back waiting for it to happen, thinking mm-hmm. it's going to miraculously happen. Every single person that does this properly also says something to themselves like, okay, where else can I get it from? Where else is there more around me? Where is the abundance that I'm not tapping into? Mm-hmm. We had Rachel on the podcast a while back, right? Ages ago now, actually. She was a great example of it. She noticed that things were shifting, but she didn't stop there. So every month she would go in and find a way to save on her other certain bills. The next, you know, quarter she would look and figure out what something else she could do to help her to push her along. So she was actively involved in it. She wasn't just passively involved.
Right.
And so some people I think are passively involved. They're doing it and they're doing the process, but they're not actively involved in the process. And what ends up happening then is they feel like they're taking money from another aspect to put into their savings, but they're not actually growing their worth because they're not actively involved in doing that.
Right.
And I feel like when you're actively involved, it doesn't feel like it's not enough. It's right. like a tipping point that comes. You start to feel like, okay, it's moving slowly. But every single person I've spoken to that's been actively involved in working their money using the wealth principles and they've been active in it, they start to see the fruit of their labor basically very, very shortly into the process. They start to see, oh my God, I never had that much money in here before. I didn't realize this. And so what they do is they get excited and it starts that snowball effect of them being more active because they start to see that it's actually working for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
there's some people that go, they just, it's almost like they're not attached at all. They just do the process and then move away and carry on without actually being mindful that process is a part of what they need to be doing. They have to also be actively involved, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because when they're actively involved, I just don't see that people say, oh, there's not enough. People say there's not enough, they want to grow their savings, but not that there's not enough, I haven't done a good job up until now. Does that make sense?
Right, yeah.
They get, okay, this has been really good, I've seen this, now what else can I do?
Right.
That kind of energy is what makes it grow. Even more. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, they're just going, oh, that's good. It's there, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to be actively involved. Yeah. If you're not doing that, like, there's no way. I mean, you're just – all you've done is just, like, lulled your brain to sleep, right?
Yeah.
Because you're just doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you actively get in and pursue how you can build it faster and make more money.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I see that with you. Like anyone would spend a week with you and go, there'd be like 50 million things happening because you're looking at another way over here, another way over here. Like you talk about it. Do you know what I mean?
So
you're actively speaking about it, observing, just, you know, you walk down and go, oh my God, how are those people making money? This is what I would do. Do you know what I mean?
And
then also over here.
But it's like, really high on my value system.
It is high on your value system. I understand that. But it's high enough on this person's value system to be asking the question. And so it's like, well, what else can you do? If you're feeling like it's not enough, you're not actively engaged.
Yeah.
I feel like you're not pushing that. You're not finding that, you know, you're not being grateful for what you've got and then finding new ways to find more.
Yeah.
Is what I think. Yeah.
Yeah. When you find new ways to find more, there's a great Dean Martini statement. When you find new ways help other people find greater income, you get more ways to help other people. You get more greater forms of income. Yeah. And I think that's an important statement. You know, if you're learning things and you're learning how to be able to, you know, how to be able to generate wealth and master your wealth, the quicker you pass it on and help other people to do the same thing, the quicker new forms of wealth finds you. This is why one of the things I find when I'm talking to people that have been really successful with the principles, you know, it's common that they're telling everybody, you know, and not everybody wants to hear it. I get that. Not everybody wants to hear it, but they eventually then tone it down and find the ones that do want to hhear it and say, look, this is how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just energy. It's coming into your life. You've just, when it comes in, if it hits disorganized, if it comes into your life and you press one or two buttons, either fucking organized or you press disorganized. Mm-hmm. But as the money comes in, if you're habitually pressing disorganized, well, then it will go out in disorganized ways. Mm-hmm. And it goes to the money that goes out of your life goes to the organizations that are organized.
Yeah, it goes to where it's more organized.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where it's heading to.
So therefore, if you want it to come to you, you got to get more organized.
So that's another summary of how to get more is that you got to be more organized. That is being actively involved, right?
Yeah.
That's you stepping up and finding and utilizing those traits.
Which again boils back to the first law of economics, supply and demand.
Put
the fucking demand on and the supply will follow.
I have one more question I'm going to ask this one, but this is going to be a quick one.
Mm-hmm.
Should money management be taught in schools? Well, okay. it's probably not going to be that quick.
I mean, look, the question I have is why would they not have taught it in the first place?
Yeah. So my feeling with that is there's so much that should be taught in schools that's not taught in schools from an ex-school teacher, right?
There's so many things that are taught in school that are just fucking bullshit. Yeah. Like you just don't...
So there's things that we don't understand. We just don't... Like you leave school not knowing. Yeah. I left school not knowing how a credit card worked and the fact that it would... affect my credit score if I didn't use my credit card properly. Mm. And I tell my my wealth principals clients all the time that I had to learn that the hard way. Mm. And as a result of that, I realized that I had to do something more. Like I had to be more aware. I had to know more about how things were happening in order for that to in order for me not to do that.
Yeah.
So I think though schools aren't teaching it. At the end of the day, the shoulds, woulds, coulds, it doesn't matter. You're not getting taught that in school. So my recommendation is rather than blaming the school, if you're a parent, you've got to set yourself up and teach by leading.
Yeah.
And I think that leading the way for your kids and being actively involved and teaching them how money works and how money looks and how money feels and how deals are made and all that sort of stuff, I think that's so important. Mm. And I think you do a great job with your girls and Ollie now, but the girls are a little bit older to be able to do some of those deals now. Mm-hmm. But you do a great job with the kids in terms of teaching them. I was there one day and you had some money in your hand and you gave it to Ollie to look at, feel, touch, not to be afraid of, smell it. This is what it's like. Do you know what I mean? You teach them how to make deals. You teach them they learn through your discussion about how you're approaching life, that this is how you handle money. But there's so many things that we have to lead the way. If it's not getting taught in the schools, then you have to be the greatest example to your own kids, in my opinion.
And don't shy away from the money conversation. No. Either way, when it's stressful, when it's plentiful, don't shy away from those conversations. Yeah. Teach the kids how to actually manage their emotions around money and understand it, you know?
Yeah.
And
get them to use it as well. It's another big thing. As a teacher, a lot of kids weren't allowed to use money and therefore they were affected by that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I send my kids in with the credit card all the time. I'll go on in and pay for that. Go on in and pay for that. I do it all the time. But even physical cash,
do you know what I mean? They don't understand the concept of getting change. They don't because they feel like they're not empowered because they haven't got that ability to do that. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's really important to do that. Mm-hmm. That money management stuff. So, you know, there's simple ways you can do that with kids now. Like a lot of the kids are doing different money boxes where they're saving, they're tithing and they're spending. Do you know what I mean? They've got their three types of things and then they build it up over time. And I think that's a really good way to start with kids doing that. But really important to do it yourself.
Yeah, cool.
All right, I think that was good. I like the question and answer format.
Yeah, Q&A is great. Q&A is great. Let's fly. I love it.
Yeah, I love it. All right.
Even if you live the most extraordinary life, there is always more to learn. This is why tens of thousands of people are using MJB Seminars techniques to hack their consciousness and bridge the gap from where they are to where they actually want to be.
MJB Seminars use cutting-edge transformational processes that are science-based and backed to help people break through subconscious barriers and limiting beliefs in order to reset, reboot, and live inspired. If you'd like to know more today, Google search MJB Seminars Bridge the Gap. Click on the first link and watch the video.
Now, for simply watching the video, you will also receive a complimentary coaching session with one of our master coaches valued at over $600 to help you get traction in your life today. Remember, live life inspired.